August 14, 2022. This is The Better Life. I'm your host, Timothy Lawson. Living a better life means finding value wherever you can, even in your daily life. I found myself playing an angle on my local grocery rewards program, and I was like, I wonder if other people get a similar rush to this, and I wonder if they're also gamblers. Like, is there a crossover on that Venn diagram? I was able to take advantage of a number of different offers sort of all at the same time and maximize the discount that I was getting at the grocery store. And I can't remember the last time I got so excited to look at a grocery store receipt and with utter glee and excitement and pride, really, and a lot of pride. A lot more useful than some of the bets that I've made at a casino. But in that moment I was sitting there, I was like, I wonder if this is like a game. Like, I know, like, I remember when like the extreme couponing was a thing. It's nothing like that. Like, I'm not like scouring coupon books and stuff like that for the bit. It was straightforward in the rewards program, much like you would look at like multiple promotion offers, right? Like when you look at maybe the mailer you get and then the promotion for the day, and then maybe you have some free play on top of that and just sort of stack everything for a big day. It was similar to that, and it made me think about being a gambler, and I was like, I feel like this is actually part of the better life. I bet I wouldn't be surprised to find out that other people that enjoyed this also maybe enjoy some aspect of gambling. So that's me living the better life outside of the casino. This week on the podcast, we have Rob Pizzola. Rob Pizzola, he is co-founder of BetStamp, co-host of Circles Off. You can find him on Twitter at Rob Pizzola, commenting on a number of things. He's a great follow. The podcast is wonderful. I mentioned it a couple times recently. Decided to reach out to Rob, get him on the show, and what a delightful interview this was. Rob came with some honesty and some tremendous insights that I think you all enjoy. Rob Pizzola, co-founder of BetStamp and the co-host of Circles Off podcast. Sir, you're a name that's been on my list for a long time. I finally was like, I don't know why I haven't asked him to be on the show. Glad we're making it happen. Welcome to The Better Life.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Tim.
So, Rob, we're going to start this interview where we start all of the interviews. And going back to your first exposure to gambling, can you recall the first time, maybe not the first time you personally were making bets, but just when you were around it?
Oh yeah, for sure. And this would be at a very early age for me. I come from two parents that were both born in Italy and immigrated to Canada when they were younger with large families. So around the holidays, especially around Christmas time, huge, holiday for our family, we'd have these big get-togethers, and there would always be like an Italian cards game that would break out at those. So I was very exposed to this when I was young. And funny enough, like when I was 8 years old, I was probably playing in these games. We're talking literally quarters or like loonies, and my parents would give me money to play in them as well. But I'm a very, even at an early age, I was a very mathematical, strategic type of guy. I naturally gravitated to anything that was a strategy type of game. Even back in the day when I was growing up, the simple Windows 94 games of like Minesweeper and Solitaire and stuff like that, I used to kill hours doing stuff like that and try to learn strategies for each game. So that was my first exposure to any sort of gambling or any sort of betting. And then on top of that, my father was a big horse racing guy. We had Woodbine Racetrack when I was growing up was 5 minutes from my house, still not far from my house now, but we'd spend some weekends at the track when I was in my teens. He would preach the importance to me of like not betting a ton, risk only what you can, it's entertainment value, so on and so forth. But I was exposed to like cards and horse racing long before I was exposed to anything sports betting.
So we've talked a bit on this show. Every time someone brings up horse racing being a part of their youth, I always bring up how, the current state of horse racing is definitely much different than it was 30 years ago. I mean, I imagine it can't be too much different, but I mean, what does the horse racing scene look like in Canada these days? Like, are there still lively tracks or is it the dying sport that it is in America?
Yeah, I definitely think it's dying. you know, most of the racetracks locally around me would have incorporated some sort of casino element now, or live poker game, or anything else to try to get somebody out to the track that is not just strictly horse racing. I think it's just like, listen, it's very entertaining when a race is going on, that minute and a half betting, but like the downtime in between just does not resonate with the younger demographic, so to speak. Even if they can bet on, you know, races at different tracks in between, it's just not the same as watching that live race in front of you. So I think the downtime in between has really killed the sport. We're used to like people consuming things in very small doses nowadays. Even you look at sports like baseball, right, which are prolonged and extended and boring. They just don't resonate with the younger demographic either. So I don't want to say it's completely dead. There was like a little bit of a revival with the introduction of slots and other casino games at the local tracks. But I think people are going to the track for reasons other than betting the horses, and then might find themselves betting the horses.
Yeah. Do you find yourself, like, if you were when was the last time you were at a track?
I went once earlier this summer.
Oh, okay.
I think it's just a good day out. Like, sure. Honestly, I just like to enjoy like the buffet and bet on some races. And, you know, my wife likes to come out with me, some friends, and so on and so forth. So I'll typically go out to a track a couple times a year. But I'm not like the guy that's going to, you know, buy the magazine or whatever, the guide, and try to dissect all the stats that are in there. And like, that's just not me. I'm more so just like picking based off of feel, lucky numbers, a license plate of a car I like as I walk in, and, you know, just betting those numbers and so on and so forth. I like to be outside, like to experience different things as well. So it's let's say a couple times a year for me.
Yeah. So you had this introduction to gambling, as a youth. When do you start sort of getting interested in gambling more, as we know, like a sports betting, casino gaming, whatever your first interest was growing up?
Early high school. So all the seniors in high school would have been runners for sports books at that time. We're working for, local, call it out for what is local mob, Hell's Angels, so on and so forth, who are running all of the books in this area, at least PPH wise. And they would recruit younger people, seniors at high school, to then get the juniors and the sophomores and the freshmen betting at that time. So that was my first venture into it, where I had someone approach me at school who was basically like, oh, you're a huge sports fan, you watch a ton of sports. Have you ever considered betting on it to try to make some money? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's a great idea. I mean, I watch tons of sports. But my only passion is really watching sports. Sure, give me an account and I'll bet into it. And you very quickly learn that it's much harder than it seems, even when you think you really know a sport. So very early on in high school was when I was first exposed to it. And unfortunately, I mean, I went down a pretty bad path at that time, because it's just frustrating. Like, you start to convince yourself, even though you're losing, you convince yourself that you're unlucky. You're like, I watch these games, I know what's going on. Like, there's a bad beat on this, bad play here. If that worked in my favor, things would have been different this week. And it really takes a long time before you come to the realization of, wow, you know, like maybe I'm just not very good at this, or have to figure out a way where I can actually be, you know, succeed at this before I want to risk any more money.
You bring up that they when they approached you, they probably like, oh, you know, sports, you should bet on sports. And something we see a lot of recreational players, they're like, oh, I know this sport, I used to play it, or I'm a big fan or whatever. And like some sort of like leading factor into why they might be able to be good at that. And it makes me wonder if it reminds me of when I was on the range in boot camp, the drill instructors would be like, if you have never shot a rifle, it'll be easier for us to teach you how to shoot than if you're someone who grew up with guns, right? And I've started to believe this now with sports betting, in that if you come into this thinking that you understand, because you know the sports, you can now bet on it, I think it's almost easier to be like, if you don't know how to, if you're the less familiar you are with this, the easier it is to teach you the principles of successful sports betting.
I absolutely wholeheartedly agree with that. I think there's a number of reasons for it. One, I think people go down the same path that I did, where they just convince themselves that they're unlucky on things. Like, they know what they're doing, but they're just unlucky. I think the second is an ego thing for sports fans. I don't know why, but it should really be studied as to why people in general can't admit when they're losing, or that they don't know something, or that someone else has greater knowledge in it. Like, you know, even today, I posted a DM to my Twitter account today about something along the lines of, you know, I see it in preseason football every year, where people are like, oh, you're an absolute degenerate if you're betting preseason football. That couldn't be further from the truth. I'll post something, I'll explain why I feel that way, but I still get a bunch of messages from people saying like, no, this doesn't make sense, or you don't understand what's going on. And I'm at the I think these people are beyond help in some capacity, because they've already, you know, committed to this stance on what sports betting is. So I completely agree with you. Like, if I had to teach my wife sports betting today, I would have a much better chance of getting her to be a winning better than if I were to teach all my friends, and sit them down with a course, because they're just ingrained to believe certain things. I tell my friends all the time, they'll bet football on like fade the public, or the book is trying to trap you on this. And I try to explain to them why that's not true, but they've heard it so often throughout their life that it becomes a fact for them. And they, even though they know what I do for a living, they still struggle to comprehend what I'm telling them, or they think I'm crazy for telling them that, which is insane when I try to, you know, take a step back and think about it. So I completely agree with that standpoint. I think there's a lot of people who are getting involved in the space now that are just consuming good information and becoming sharp very quickly. And then there's a lot of people that have been involved for a decade or more that are just continuously go down the same path, are learning absolutely nothing. But for some reason, it's impossible for them to admit that there's opportunity for growth.
Yeah. So how long were you stuck in that? In you know, the I guess maybe the hamster wheel, I guess we'll say, of telling yourself you're unlucky, not really learning how to bet, but just using your opinion on sports to drive bets. Like, how long were you stuck in that?
Probably about a decade. High school and university for sure. And then maybe a year or two into my professional career, which was started in as a radio host, funny enough, producing sports betting content at that time, where I was trying to approach things from a more statistical perspective, doing things that I typically hadn't done in the past. But in hindsight, a lot of it was just useless anyways. Didn't really understand how markets worked. Timing of my bets is not great, so on and so forth. But took about a decade before I realized, you know, it's a huge time suck for me, big time commitment. I'm not actually enjoying watching sports anymore because I'm continuously losing. I can't put a down payment on a house or a condo because I'm losing the money that I'm bringing in. So why am I doing this to myself? Took a long time to get there. It did. And I resonate and sympathize with people who go down that path, because I've lived it myself. But yeah, I'm literally about a decade before I even stopped. I went cold turkey on betting for a year or so, which was actually extremely difficult to do because I was hosting shows that were centered around betting. So I had to keep up with the space, but not bet myself. And in the process of doing that, I started to research, you know, I have a university background in statistics and computer science. So I started to research how to build out models a little bit more, started to read books about it. And then just naturally morphed into like my hobby is I'm going to figure out a way to beat sports and actually win back all the money that I've lost in my lifetime. So it took about 10 years for me to come to that realization.
I think it's incredibly important for professional or even just smart bettors to admit that, because so few of us started knowing how to do this well from year one, right? There's a couple exceptions here and there, but largely a lot of us learned by losing, but had the determination to not lose and figure out, you know, how to, if I were to meet the better I was 10 years ago, I would be so embarrassed, right? Like if I were to bring 10 years ago, that person on my podcast, I would like laugh at them, right? Like, what are you doing? Like, you don't know what and I think it's important to, for leaders, in this space to admit that, because it's good to, of course, encourage people to be smart bettors and teach them how to do that. But for the people who are still sort of trying to figure that out, encouraging them, like, it's okay, we were there too. Like, you're gonna, keep moving forward, keep your head on straight. Were you in this decade, was it just sports betting, or did you have other forms of gambling that you were partaking in?
I did play poker professionally for 1 year out of school before I got a full-time job. So, I, like many people, got turned on to poker with the Chris Moneymaker World Series of Poker. Started playing a lot of games with my friends, like home games, but just casually. Very quickly realized that I was by far the best person playing in my inner friend group. So I'm like, okay, I expanded into some more local games, was winning a lot of money there. And then that expanded into online poker as well, which honestly I did fairly well at for a year. But I just grew to hate it very quickly. Became very monotonous for me. I actually tried to treat poker like a full-time job, like a 9-to-5. I was living with my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, who would go off to school during the day. And as soon as she would go off, I'd sit down at the computer, I'd play all day till she got home, and then I would log off for the night. And after maybe 2 or 3 months, I started to notice, okay, she's leaving for school and I'm sleeping in like another hour or two. I'm logging off way earlier to play video games before she gets home. I just really didn't enjoy it all that much.
Yeah.
Some people find that hard to believe. They're like, oh, if you're making money, like it is what it is, but that's never been me. Like even sports betting now, and we can get into this a little bit afterwards, but like it's more monotonous to me than it used to be. I used to take so much pleasure in beating certain markets, winning, and I still do, but I just enjoy other things so much more at this point that I'll still bet. I just don't do it in the same capacity that I once did. And even the same thing with poker. Poker, I'll still occasionally play some home games here and there. I'll get my fix like 3 or 4 times a year. And then outside of that, I'm not really playing much more, don't do anything online. So that kind of was a big part of my life as well. Enjoyed it for a bit, but then for years, I actually didn't play because I just couldn't stand it anymore.
I have found that with sports specifically, that on the couple leagues that I like really am focused on, I've become a fan of them through the process of betting them. I've become a fan enough to where I can enjoy, if there's a night, if there's a game that I don't have action on it, I can throw that game on and be entertained. Right. I don't need to have, I totally get the, after a while, it's just one big process and isn't the entertainment that it was once before. So as you're learning to become a better bettor, how did you trust yourself to do that? Because after so long of being a losing bettor, the determination to win, it took a while to see enough of the results to believe that you were in fact heading in the right direction. So after a decade of losing, like how did you, like what was it about it? How did you like trust yourself to do that safely without the botting falling out again?
I needed confirmation from other bettors. So for years, I would, as I was building out these models for different sports, I would post picks to Twitter every day. And I sort of built a following doing that because I was fairly successful over the course of a few seasons in MLB and NHL, where people were following me pretty regularly. I returned 5% or more in a couple years. And then I actually just started posting like the straight model outputs to Twitter instead of the actual picks so that people could do with them whatever they wanted to. And I did that for a couple months to start one baseball season. And someone reached out to me through Twitter DMs and they basically said, see your model outputs every day. Would you be interested in having a larger chat about this? Sure, no problem. Give me my phone number. Ended up having a pretty extensive chat with someone who's actually now like my tightest betting partner in the world, where he basically said to me at that time, you know, you're posting these numbers to Twitter every single day. Someone is betting them as soon as you post them and ruining the market. Lines are moving. All of this is way over my head at this point. I have no idea what he's talking about. He's explaining to me like, you know, we want to get down quietly. We're trying not to blow up the whole market, so on and so forth. And he's basically giving me an educational lesson for an hour in that conversation, but it ends with, we think your stuff is really good. Have been monitoring it for a while. We will pay you to no longer post this stuff publicly, and we will give you a free roll on your bets. So it's completely risk-free on your end. You can bet through us, which at that time I'm gonna take that. I mean, I'm making like $35,000 a year as a radio host. Guys offering me like a fairly decent sized bet for free. So I took that and I did that for a couple of years, kind of risk-free, until I wasn't undercapitalized and I could start risking my own money as part of this. And that's sort of the way it grew. But it was just like a confirmation from another bettor, essentially. Like, I knew I was growing my following. I knew that I had something. I knew that I could probably win. I just didn't know to the extent at which, you know, to how good my stuff was until I got that call. So that was just a game changer for me. In a lot of ways, I owe a lot of what I have to being an early adopter of Twitter, and growing a following and just having, you know, people see my stuff. That's kind of the story. If no one ever reached out to me, I don't know how long I would have just continued down the same path. I was literally betting like $100 to $200 a game at that time, which is fine. You know, I was, like I said, I wasn't losing anymore. I was winning, but it was just a hobby. Wasn't anything. I had never even considered like this could potentially be a profession for me at some point. That was a life-changing moment for me.
So you mentioned, you know, how that being an early adopter of Twitter, on Circles Off, you have a wonderful segment called Tweets That Trigger Us, which when I hit play on Circles Off and you guys mentioned that there's a segment coming up, I get very excited. But even though there's horrible people in gambling Twitter and tons of misinformation, you know, can you expand a little bit more on how critical Twitter has been? I mean, you touched on this story here, but just, you know, in the development of you as a bettor, the networking, what's been possible for things outside, because I think gambling Twitter gets a bad rap for a lot of very legitimate reasons, but I think a lot of us have gained opportunity that we wouldn't otherwise have simply because we're on the platform.
Completely agree. I mean, for years, I connected with people that I now call my friends, who our first interaction ever was just through a keyboard. And we've met up in person, and, you know, these are like relationships that changed my life in a lot of ways. But it's absolutely like social media can be a huge benefit and a huge tool. And yes, there's a lot of negativity on there, but I will tell you this. I was definitely in the camp of, I thought I had it all figured out at one point in life. To your point of, every once in a while, I do go back and revisit old tweets of mine, because I have not scrubbed my account. I have not deleted stuff from 10 years ago. And I just laugh to myself. I'm like, I actually cannot believe this was me. But I thought I had it all figured out at one point. And I look at some of the responses of people who were like willingly trying to educate me at that point, and I was just extremely dismissive of it altogether and thought that they were coming across as being in bad faith or like, you know, trying to put me down and stuff like that. So I get that point of view from other people now, because most people do think that they, you know, they think that because they have been betting for a long time, they understand everything betting. And that's couldn't be further from the truth. But I learned a lot of that just through mutual connections. I've gained life skills that I would never have had through connecting through people on Twitter, saved countless hours of time by finding certain people through Twitter who could do something better than me, where I could offer something in exchange. So all those things are extremely valuable. And I mean, we all see the negativity that's out there, but I mean, I honestly owe so much of what I have built in life to that platform and to the connections I've made through that platform.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, you know, looking back at, you know, and I've done the same, you look back, you see bad takes, bad, you know, bad opinions or just arrogant opinions or arrogant stances. But I do think that it's a bit of a byproduct of the platform. And I definitely have experienced this as a content creator. You don't want to ever suggest that you don't know what you're talking about. So you almost overcompensate and trying to prove you know what you're talking about. I mean, I've definitely fallen in that trap before, only to be humiliated when it's clear that I'm wrong, right? And one thing you learn as you gain a following, and I'm sure you've experienced the same thing, is it's okay to be like, I don't know, or I was wrong, or this was, you know, like, I had the wrong idea. I could, like, admitting that you're vulnerable or that you're just a human is perfectly acceptable, even in this world where no one loses a bet, right?
Agreed. I mean, I've doubled down on so many bad takes, which I'm just so embarrassed about after the fact. But I mean, I put myself in that position at that time. I thought I had it all figured out. I look at the space now, I see who's producing content. I mean, a lot of it is an ill will. Not a lot of people aren't intentionally trying to mislead other people. They actually believe in their heart that like reverse line movement in the NFL matters, or that closing line value doesn't matter, or whatever. Over time, they've just built up this opinion, and like, you know, they believe it as truth nowadays. So I mean, it's an interesting space. I honestly don't think that there's anything comparable in the world where, you know, if you think about any other field and like who gets put in the forefront in terms of media coverage or so on and so forth, you know, look at weather, for example. Like weather, you have to be a meteorologist. You know, you have to understand how weather works. You're not just going to take some random guy off the street who's can randomly predict when it's going to rain based off of like looking up in the sky. But in the sports betting space, every sports bettor is given some sort of platform. And in a lot of cases, they either portray themselves as an expert, or they believe, in some cases they're intentionally misleading, but in a lot of cases they actually believe that they're an expert. And I mean, it's just a really weird industry. Like it's a one of a kind, and it's like extremely unusual.
Sports betting, and you know, Rufus Peabody has touched on this for himself personally. Him and I talked about it here a few months ago. Sports betting is one of the most glaring examples of people searching for validation, right? Like people, you know, the people who are constantly posting their results, or you know, it's you know, part of it, a lot of us just enjoy it, it's a hobby, but it's clear so many people are just searching for validation on what it is, on their opinion, right?
I agree. I mean, The weird thing about sports betting, and I've obviously lived through this as well, so I'm not going to say anything offensive to anyone in particular. But you know, the weirdest thing about sports betting is that we know in like industry studies and numbers from offshore sports books, regulated sports books, so we know that nearly 99% of people are going to lose at betting on sports. This is just common knowledge, whatever the number may be, upper 90th percentile of people are going to lose on sports betting. But no one can admit that they lose. It's so difficult for someone to say, yeah, I'm a losing sports bettor or whatever, I do it for entertainment value. Everyone feels the need to convince everyone else that they're a winning bettor. Part of it is the desire to be in that 1% for sure. But I don't know why it's so difficult. Like I don't really understand it. When I'm no longer betting for a living, if it's because I lost my edge, I will come out and say, I no longer have an edge in these sports, and that's why I don't bet them. I no longer bet Major League Baseball. because I do not think I can beat Major League Baseball over the course of a season, at least the major market. I don't think I will win. I have partners that still bet it, and I, you know, I'll bet the stuff out on their behalf because they're still showing that they can. I personally cannot do that. But I don't know why it just feels so wrong for someone to come out and say that. And no one's willing to do that. Like, I have so much, you know, I'll talk about one person in the industry that he's very engaging for recreational bettors. His Twitter handle, I think, is Book It Trent, or sure. He's blown up. He's gone from less than 10,000 followers to over 100,000 over the course of a year. And all the guy does is be real. He puts out content about him being a losing bettor. He openly mocks his losing bets. He's doing so much content around him just being a loser from a betting point of view, not talking about him as personally or anything like that. And he's putting out picks every day, and he still has an army of people that want to bet the exact same things as him because they want, and they're seeking that sense of community. They want to ride the wave with him. If he wins, I win. If he loses, I'm losing with this guy as well, because he's just one of us. And I think that, you know, content is engaging for sure, but I think he's really been able to resonate with people because he is a regular person that is just out there, not selling himself as the next Billy Walters of sports betting or anything like that. And I think there's a real lesson to be learned from him in terms of, you know, how to generate engagement by being real. And I think he definitely gets a bad rap by like the sharp betting space, because they're like, oh, he's putting out garbage, he's a losing bettor or whatever. It's like, okay, but he, you know, he's telling people he's a losing bettor. Where's the harm in that? Like, if you're continuously putting out content and saying, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm trying to make engaging content here, and like, people are developing some sense of community, people are getting value out of that. That's why they're tuning into his stuff. That's why they're following his stuff. So I really appreciate that approach, because it's just very real. And I think that there's way more room for that. Now, obviously, there's going to be guys out there and girls all the time that are going to go the approach of scamming, plain and simple, because it's so easy to do nowadays. And there's so much money to be made in this industry by ripping people off, frankly. But there's also that middle section of people that they either haven't convinced themselves that they're a losing bettor, they're ashamed or scared of what people will think of them if they're a losing bettor. There's, you know, these are people that are employed by sports books in a lot of cases, right? You know, why do you think you're employed by a sports book producing sports betting content? I mean, let's be real here. Let's put two and two together. But it's just a crazy space. And I think there's just so much room for just people to just be upfront and honest. Like, I don't know when this became a thing. It always has been, but I just, like, it's okay to tell people, you know, you had a losing season, or you no longer have an edge in something, or you're just a regular person, like throwing darts. Like, I would respect somebody much more if they're like, yeah, I have no process or whatever, I just want to have action on the games, than I would if they come out and they're like, oh yeah, you know, I put in 8 hours a day into handicapping the board. And what, it's like, who cares? Do you win or not? Like, I don't care how much time you put in. Like, that's not going to make me validate you as a content creator or a bettor. So, a little bit of a tangent there, but it's some weird part of the space that I don't think we'll ever overcome that, because people are just so ashamed to say that they lose. I don't get it.
It's a good tangent to have, especially for this audience. In the first few months of the Bettor Life, you know, covering both sports betting and casino gaming, one of the things that my audience initially said they resonated with was talking about the experiences and the admission of just being, of losing, right? Like, whether it's losing a sports bet or walking away from the craps table, having lost your buy-in, like, that happens, and it's okay to admit it. And it's okay to talk about how frustrating that is, right? Like, I, you know, if you go check out my podcast reviews, there are people complaining that I get upset about losing sports bets. It's like, no, I mean, it's a negative experience. It's human to want to, you know, express frustration with having a negative experience. The I have gotten to a point where when people, you know, like now that sports betting's legal, people talk about it more, people are more open about asking about it if they find out someone bets. And so people, you know, like colleagues and friends, like, oh, are you good at it? And I will just tell them, like, yeah, I'm good at betting soccer and I bet NFL for fun. You know, and they're, you know, they're like, what? I was like, yeah, I might beat the Super Bowl if I get enough props down, but otherwise, over the course of a season, I'm betting that way. If I have nothing else to do on a Sunday, I can turn on a game and have a little action. And it's okay to admit that I have one aspect of sports betting in which I profit from, and one aspect of sports betting that is purely entertainment. Like those two things can exist. And I think so many people struggle with that. They think if you're winning better, you can only do winning betting things. No, especially if you're not a pro, you can bet on sports in a way that's profitable, and you can bet on sports in a way that just is a lot of fun.
I talked about this on the last episode of Circles Off I did with friends. Every single week, there's a sports book in Canada called Sports Interaction. They offer something called a pinata pick.
Yes. Where
they basically are giving you a random golfer to win a tournament at odds of 125-1. It's just a complete randomizer. I love doing that every week. Is it negative expected value? Of course it is. I know that. I'm not an idiot. I don't expect to win in the long run, but we just like the randomness of like not having to do work. We'll have a rooting interest. It's all recreational money. Like I say stuff like that and I get backlash. Oh no, like no professional would ever do that. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I know the differences between like my bets and when I'm making a good bet and when I'm not. I mean, there is definitely something about betting for entertainment value. I don't know why people fail to realize. And even from a pro perspective, like how many times have I, you know, been out with friends, other pro bettors on the golf course where we're betting each other, like someone doesn't have an edge there. It's just for fun. Like, you know, it is what it is. So that kind of stuff always gets me for sure. I mean, like every single type of, you know, every pro bettor is supposed to be lumped into this bucket of they win at everything that they do. They only make good bets. And it's like, no, I mean, that's just not, it's not realistic.
I would be to do my due diligence here for my audience. Are there any aspects of the casino that you indulge in? Do you find yourself at any tables when you're at a casino?
So yes. Now I will say the first thing I'm probably going to do if I go to a casino is put myself on the poker waiting list. Okay. Because I would rather just play poker. Even if I don't have an edge there anymore, it is probably what I do enjoy most because I play so infrequently now. So I like that. I know a lot of poker now is, you know, game theory optimization, people just studying ranges and stuff like that. I'm never going to do that. So I'm never going to have an edge in any big games. But aside from that, yeah, I like to get a rush out of putting money down, playing roulette or craps or any other casino game. Again, it's all about expectations, right? Going in, I know that I'm not, you know, I'm at a disadvantage with certain games that I'm playing. I will seek out games where I can have an advantage. They just barely exist anymore. Like I count cards for blackjack for years, but it's so hard to find blackjack tables that are, multi-deck nowadays, like a lot of the auto shufflers and so on and so forth. So it's a little tougher, but yeah, I would say probably once every 3 to 4 months, I find myself at a casino, roughly around that. And I'll play anything, like literally anything, as long as I understand the game. And if I see something at a casino, which I don't understand, or I'm like, oh, that's new or whatever, I'll learn the rules so that I can play it next time.
Okay. Very good. What, you know, talking about, you know, the imperfections of being a bettor, is there a rookie, square, degenerate, whatever you want to call it, mistake that you either currently find yourself making from time to time or like most recently had to correct yourself out of? And you know, we're not talking about the entertainment bets like we just talked about with the pinata bet, stuff like that, but like in your actual process, do you ever find yourself stumbling on something that maybe is considered a fundamental or something that a smart objective better wouldn't do?
Yeah, probably. Like there's one that stands out to me in terms of it's like, okay, I preach line shopping. Like, and I'm a big practice what you preach guy. but I do some live betting for entertainment purposes. And oftentimes I'll have multiple sports books open up at my computer or whatever. But oftentimes I just find myself getting into the laziness mode more so than anything. Listen, it's a conscious mistake, I'll be honest with you. But oftentimes I'll just be like, I'm going to be betting the underdog here. I know this book is probably going to have the best line on the underdog. I'm just going to bet it rather than opening up all the books, doing the comparison in real time. It doesn't really take much, honestly, especially with a multi-monitor setup like I have here. I can easily, it's literally just the pain of logging into like 8 sites for live betting purposes. Yeah. And having those up all on screen and doing a comparison. So that's probably the big one for me. I do line shop in pretty much everything that I bet. Obviously, I am looking to get down a lot of money on a lot of the stuff that I play. So it comes down to, you know, mixing and matching, playing some stuff here, playing some stuff there, reaching out to other bettors to see if they potentially like the other side. So we can do like a no vig type of thing. I'm very conscious and price sensitive. But in live betting, I sometimes just fall down the rabbit. I don't want to say fall down the rabbit hole, but like I just fall into like a pattern of laziness where I'll be, you know, trading an NFL game, Sunday night football. I noticed that one sports book is continuously having the best line on one side. I end up just like, okay, I'm going to place this bet. I'm going to that book and I don't even shop it anymore.
I will do the same on futures. I will see a future somewhere that I know it like, oh, that's too high. I'll bet it and realize, oh, I didn't look at these other books. Right. It was so clear that this is like, you know, usually I've seen them at 50-1, all of a sudden here at 70-1, bet it without even thinking, well, I guess I probably should have checked those other books that I haven't looked at yet to make sure that was actually the best number. I'm curious your thoughts on, I have a range of outs and my range of what I can get down all these outs is different from book to book, like it is for many of us. I struggle with if a book that I'm limited at has the better number, mm-hmm. I struggle with betting another number that's worse where I can get a bigger bet down. And I'm sure this is like just a part, like a, this is like a development thing, something I just have to like learn to be better at. Like in that scenario, would you just get what you can down on the best number and then go to assuming the next best number is still a bettable number, right? Never going for something that's not an edge. But I always struggle with if I can look at half of what I want down on the best number, I struggle with then putting the other half on the next number because it's not as good.
Yeah. So, I mean, it also depends on the markets and it depends on how quickly you have to get your bet down. So there's two factors there, right? Like if I'm reacting to news, any sort of news related play, I am automatically going to go to the books where I know I can get the most down quickly, even if it's at a worse price, because I'm not going to take, you know, I'm not going to go to Bet Rivers and bet my $66 or go to wherever and bet my, you know, $4.50 just to get that. It would make no sense to do that.
Right.
So it depends on the type of bet. And whether or not it's time sensitive, that's the first thing. The second thing is, I'll split it up across multiple books, but like I have access to all sorts of stuff. I have regulated market. I have PPH, I have offshore. I can bet wherever I want to shop all of those books. You know, very easy to do with Betstamp for me personally, but I'll forego a site completely if they're, you know, if I have to make to log in and they're only going to give me $50 or something like that, I'm probably just going to give some other site that $50, even though it was a better line. And it's just like a matter of principle type of thing more so than anything else. But yeah, I mean, that's it really. I mean, it's definitely like the first thing that I always process in my head is like, do I have to bet this quick? That's always the thing. I need to bet this quick. I know where I'm going to bet this. Boom, done. I have 15 seconds. If it's not that, and I have plenty of time, then I'll mix and match across sports books, as best as I possibly can.
Okay. We brought it up earlier in the interview, talking about just enjoying betting and sporting events differently now as a professional bettor and where you are now versus, you know, earlier in life. Speak to that more. Like, do you, when you go to a, when you go to a game, do you have to have action on it to enjoy it? When you have action on a game, do you even find, do you even experience the sweats? Like, how differently is your sports viewing enjoyment or experience now versus 10 years ago?
That's a good question. It's very different. I will say I mostly do not watch my bets. In fact, I would say other than the NFL, other than when I say my bets, I should clarify, these are like big bets. These are like what my livelihood. I mostly don't watch that because it stresses me out, causes anxiety. I try not to follow scores for that in real time. With the exception of NFL. The only reason I follow NFL in real time though, is because I'm producing content for NFL as well. So I feel the need to keep up with the sport because I feel the need to be able to talk about it at a larger scale. I bet the most money on NHL. I don't want to know what's happening, especially nights where I have 13, 14 bets, which happens. Like, that could be a massive swing one way or the other. And when you know, and it might just be a break-even night, but could have looked really bad at one point. And like, now you've just ruined your entire evening because you're thinking about the worst the entire time. So for me, I enjoy sports better or a lot more when I don't have money on the game. I can attend a sports event without money on the game. And if I am like, if I am just casually watching a hockey game, I might throw a live bet on it, but like something that I'm not even like going to, it just adds an element of fun to it for me to have a rooting interest, even if there's no edge, but I could watch the game without it. It doesn't matter to me regardless. So the complete opposite of 10 years ago, I'll tell you that. 10 years ago, I would have always prioritized every single bet that I have of like, this is what I want to watch. Nowadays, I might not even like, if I have a heavy hockey night, for example, let's say there's 10 NHL games one night and I have bets on 8 of them. I won't watch one of the other two because there's a good chance that during the broadcast, I'm going to see the scores from the other games and I don't want anything to do with that. So I try to really just separate myself from it all. Challenging for sure, but I prefer life that way.
So I'm cute. One thing that, I mean, one of the ways that I find have it, you know, everybody knows I like betting the USL Championship, second tier American soccer. There, you know, like I go to my local game, there might be 200 people in the stands. Half of them are family members of the players playing, right? And I know that there's people who are betting into this because data is available for these leagues. It's one of the reasons why these leagues have become more popular in betting is because we're getting better data on these. Where I feel like I have an edge is I am watching as much of this these games as I can for a qualitative assessment on what I'm seeing, right? That is applicable at a smaller league like this. Do you find that do you find that same assessment to be valuable watching the NFL when millions of people are all watching the same game?
Yes and no. So I do think that there is something to the qualitative aspect and some people being able to pick up on something through watching the broadcast. With that said, what I would encourage everyone to do is like really start marking these down. What you think you're noticing and whether or not that comes to fruition, because a lot of times, you know, people will be right about something. I knew that guy looked hurt. You know, he ends up on the injury report a couple weeks later. I knew he was playing hurt, so on and so forth, but they're quick to forget the time that they thought someone was playing hurt. And then they end up playing the entire season like Matt Stafford and winning a Super Bowl. Like how many times last year did I have people telling me that Matt Stafford, like, he was playing hurt, but like, if you're avoiding betting on the Rams, well, you had a rough time. You probably would have won a lot of bets because you made that qualitative analysis of it. So I think there's something there, but I do try to trust the modeling approach as much as possible. There are ultimately going to be times, I think, in every sport where you might get a model output that you just feel is wrong. And that every bettor is going to approach that differently. For me, I might not bet that game. For others, they might just force it and they say, you know what, this is the model output, they're going to go with it. For some others, it might send them into like a complete frenzy where they think that they have to retool everything that they're doing. It's like, this can't possibly be right type of thing. So it's different for everyone, but I do think you could beat sports betting by not watching a single game.
Yeah.
I do think that there are for people who can do it properly and not just, you know, be biased by every short-term thing that they see, there's probably some value. And you know, you can pick up on things, but it's a slippery slope. And it's definitely for every person that could pick up on something watching a game, there's going to be someone that overvalues it. And it's all that they think about and it sticks in their head. And this is why most people actually suffer in terms of NFL betting on a week to week basis, because people are conditioned to remember what they saw last. Oh, this team blew out this other team. How are they not going to possibly blow out this team next week? And it's like, well, I mean, there's a range in how they're going to play. Maybe right. They played at the top end of their range and that's all you'll remember. So it's not for everyone, but I see value in it for some people.
For you know, for soccer, a lot of it is, you know, I can look at an expected goals metric and know, you know, is this a team that's playing for pace, or is this a team, like, is that XG coming because they're getting volume of dangerous attacks, or is it because they're they're being, you know, selective? And when, you know, you can make further bets in game, or even you can get for better derivative bets if you've made that qualitative assessment.
I lived through an example of this. Like, I mean, I was, my eyes helped me, you know, saved me a lot of money in one hockey season. So I've lived through this. Like, hockey, you know, statistics, the main statistic that's used now is same for as soccer is expected goals, where they're just tracking shot locations, shot type, and assigning, you know, a probability of a goal on that location, adding it up over the course of a game. But oftentimes I would watch a game. I'm talking probably about 4 or 5 years ago when expected goals started to become a thing. I'd be like, no, this is not what I just watched. These expected goals are not an indicator of what I just witnessed. And my, you know, my betting partner would say to me, okay, log all these games, like log all the games where you're seeing this, and we can eventually dig into it. And if there's anything specific to this, and we noticed that there were specific teams where it was happening. Well, one of these teams, it actually turned out that expected goals was being logged incorrectly altogether at their home arena. So that was like, okay, we picked up on that way quicker than market, saved us a ton. And the second one is like, expected goals is great, but there's a lot of items that are not incorporated into it in hockey that are meaningful. So for example, you know, a shot from the blue line is going to be very different depending on the pass before the shot and where the goalie is in the net. You know, if the goalie gives away a puck and he's not in the net and someone's shooting at an open net, the expected goal should be a lot higher than if the goalie's in the middle of the net. So we started to pick up on these little things that were not being logged, and we tried to capture them better than the public metric was capturing them. And you know, we're fairly successful in doing that. So there is, like, I don't want to get out here and say, like, there's no advantage to watching the games. There is, but you also reach a point where it's like, man, that's a lot of work. Like, it's a lot of work to bet, wake up at 7 a.m. so that you can get your bets in as soon as limits come off, be available all day as news is coming in, right up until game time, right up until that last game goes off of that day. Then watch games on top of it to gain anything meaningful. Then when are you going to incorporate that into the model itself? It gets to a point of like, it's probably valuable, but is it worth my time?
Yeah. And as you say, it's a slippery slope, because if you watch if a team X plays 6 games and you watch the first 2, miss the next 3, and then watch the 6th one, you know, who knows what you didn't see, right? You know, anyways, one thing that I'm noticing as a developing successful bettor is learning the art of sports betting, right? Like, you know, how can I keep accounts open? How can I manage an account's expectations to try to get money down? Do you think that there is an opportunity for content and education here, or do you think that gap between Rec Plus and successful not quite, because once you become a pro bettor, you've essentially figured that out, maybe, right? Or you've gotten through that tough period. Do you think that there is a opportunity for that, or do you think that that gap is so small that it would miss so many people's needs for what they need?
I think personally, it's good content, but I also think it's niche, and most people don't care. That's the reality of it. Most people they would rather watch me break down the board of a day, go game by game, give my thoughts, what I'm betting, what I'm picking, than give them a piece of advice that is so much more valuable than that. Yeah. They just don't care. That's the reality of it. Like, you know, especially, you know, once you get to that semi-sharp level, you're in the process of trying to learn. Like, these are the people that consume my podcast, that follow me on Twitter, consume my content. But there's just so many people out there that are like, give me the pick, give me your rationale for the pick. And then they're going to go bet into the worst possible number in the market. Like, they're just doing themselves a huge disservice, but they don't even realize it. So I don't want to say that there's no need for it, because there definitely is. It's the type of content I like to produce as well, because I feel like I'm actually providing value. You know, it's funny, because I do that, and that's legitimate value provided. That's learnings that people can take away, and they will become a better if they implement those, or even process them, and it gets them thinking in a different way. But I can do that, or I can do a Sunday morning NFL show where I will literally lead off the show with, you should not be betting at this time. You are doing yourself a huge disservice, or whatever. And people don't care. They're just so fascinated in what I think about every game at that. And they're probably going to blindly tail it, even though I'm not betting it at that time. Like, I'll explicitly say, I'm not betting this at this time. It's just a weird space, but I think it starts with people being unable to admit that they lose. That's where it starts, or unable to admit, not even that they lose, that there's an opportunity for growth, that there's more for them to learn. And I've personally gone down that path in life, so I get how it is. I'm not trying to, you know, be hypocritical or anything. I get it. Totally understand it. You come to a point where you just think you got things figured out, and there's no possible, you know, way that you're going to learn. That type of content, while I loved consuming that, I know some people who have gone from wreck to sharp from consuming content like that. There's just not an appetite for it. And I don't know that there ever will be.
Yeah, agreed. I'll take this opportunity to endorse Circles Off podcast, one of my favorites in the sports betting world, and one that gets the week of listen, right? We all have those podcasts we listen to the week of that's released. We have podcasts we listen to like a month later. Circles Off is a week of release podcast for me. So shout out to you and Johnny and the producers over there for putting out such a good product.
I appreciate that. I mean, we're just trying to fill a gap in market. I mean, there was really, when we started that, there's nothing like that out there. And it's kind of evolved over time as well, but it's great. I like doing that show. I mean, it's one of my favorite hours of every single week.
Yeah. Very good. Rob Pizzola at Rob Pizzola on Twitter, co-host of BetStamp, co-host of Circles Off, co-founder of BetStamp. I look forward to when USL Championship is available on the BetStamp app. That's when I'll become an avid user of it. But until then, Rob, look forward to all your NFL content, and have a wonderful season, my friend.
Thanks. Same to you.
Thank you, Rob. That was a lot of fun. I only have this is episode 188. Assuming episode 200 is sort of its own beast, I only got 10 or 11 podcasts to try to fit in the last handful of people that I've sort of always wanted to be. And it's time for me to start calling in favors, right? And start getting connections to the people that I want to have on the show. So hoping that I can get through all of these. I got a couple announcements here to make. The Better Life logo tees are restocked in the online shop, bettermerch.com, bettormerch.com. I just restocked all of the sizes. I was sold out, I think, on XL, XXL, and above. And I, so those are all restocked now. XL, double X, 3X. I think I even have one or two 4X. So if you've been hoping for one of those tees or would like to buy one, bettermerch.com, BETTOR merch.com. Use promo code YO11 for 11% off of your purchase. I have something here. I have a couple of things here for anybody who's interested. I have a 2022 Las Vegas Advisor Member Rewards booklet. It admittedly has a little bit, or I've taken some of the gambling related things out of here and used them my last time out in Vegas, but there's a good number of stuff in here still. Circa, enjoy two complimentary glasses of champagne. The D, $5 in free play for every 50 points earned on video poker. Distill, a local bar, play $50 on a bar top game or on a bar game and get $50 in free play. El Cortez, receive $10 to $1,000 in free slot play. I'm surprised I didn't use that one. So there's still a number in here. It's pretty full. And since it looks like I'm not going to get back to Vegas, I'm happy to send this to anybody who's interested. So if you're hearing this and you're going to be in Vegas before the end of the year, shoot me a DM or otherwise contact me in a way that you know how. And let me know you're interested in the Las Vegas Advisor Member Rewards booklet for 2022. Like I said, a handful of the gambling-related coupons have been used out of here, but there's still a handful left. And then all of the dining, non-gambling stuff is still in there. So if you're interested, hit me up. I want to get that to someone to use if possible. Also, the last time I was in Vegas, I pocketed a bunch of Mirage chips because someone had asked me specifically if I could grab one. And so on my last cash out or my last game, I just pocketed the handful of ones that I still had. I made sure that there was one in my collection. I sent one off to the person who requested it, and I got a few more. So if you don't have a $1 Mirage chip in your collection and you don't think you're going to make it there in time to get one on your own and would like one, please reach out to me. DMing me on Twitter is probably the easiest way to get a hold of me. Podcast at The Better Life is another way you can do. You can email me there and just let me know, hey, would love a chip if one's available. I only got a few, so I don't have a endless supply of them, but if you're interested in one and need one, reach out to me. Happy to send one off to you. And that's it. That's what I got in that bag. Of course, as you know, I had to cancel my Vegas trip. I decided against it for a couple of reasons, but I do have a casino trip back on the books. One that's more local and a little easier for me to justify and pull off. August 31st through September 2nd, that's a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I will be in Atlantic City. That is the plan anyhow, with good chances. Just got to work things out with the day job to make sure that's going to work, but that's what's on the calendar right now. That looks very likely, so if you're interested or think you want to swing through, let me know. I'm likely to be staying at Borgata, but playing elsewhere. I'll probably hit the, like, I'll be playing at Borgata as well, but I won't just be holed up at Borgata, I guess what I'm saying. I'll be staying there, but I'll be hitting the boardwalk as well. So that's the plan there. And that's all I got. That's news. Better Life Tees in the shop. Got a couple things here for anybody who's interested. And Atlantic City trip at the end of August 31st through September 2nd. Eric and I were talking the other day. If you were to hang a number on how many times I visit Atlantic City in my first 10 years living in the Washington, D.C. area, I've been here for 10 years now. I moved here in 2012. I don't know what that number really would have been, but I guarantee you I've gone way under that number. I mean, I think I can count on one hand how many times I've been to Atlantic City since I've moved here. I mean, it's not a lot. And part of it is because when I first moved here, I didn't have a whole lot of expendable income to be making such trips or going to the casino. Another one is there's local casinos, right? And then third, I guess, is it, you know, I just didn't do it, right? I just ended up not doing it. So I've been there before, but been able to figure out a couple of days that are going to work and that it makes sense for me and my family. So that is what's going, hopefully going to happen. So if some of you can be there, awesome. Okay. Patreon.com/A Better Life is where you can support the show with a monthly pledge. And you're like, hey, what, like, you guys, you're closing this down. The Better Life as a platform, as a brand, continues on. The podcast is what's likely being put to bed. Other content will be underway. And if I do create content, is likely going to hit Patreon, sooner than later. My monthly episodes with Eric, next one's going to be coming out next week. Also, Better Viewing with Mark Duvall will be recorded and hopefully released next week as well. We're going to be watching both versions of The Gambler. First, the original with Mr. James Caan, and then the newer one of Mr. Wahlberg. Those are going to be the two movies that we watch on the next Better Viewing. So if you're into that show, that show's coming, that new episode of that's coming out, and those are the movies that we're watching. Okay, thank you for everybody for listening. Thank you for your support. Thank you for all your kind words in this transition in my life. On behalf of Rob Pizzola, I am Timothy Lawson. Good night and good luck.